You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep.
Oh yeah, good morning, good morning, good morning. Hope everyone is having a great morning so far. I am. I was hoping to be back in the office today. I wanted to go back to the office today. I was told I have to wait basically 10 days from when I've been symptom-free. So I'm not allowed back in the office till next week, apparently, is the rule. So I'm stuck home for the rest of the week now. But doesn't mean I can't do the show. So here I am, and here we are. Good morning, good morning, good morning, everyone in the chat. Let's catch up there. Good morning, Lord Jam, Dino, Evan, Duncan, Dave, everyone. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Ivan Fineseth will be our guest today. 8035 Tigers Financial Partners. He's their CIO. We'll get his thoughts on markets. We'll talk the Bitcoin ETF. We'll talk earnings. We'll talk about the GameStop report from the SEC last night. I read the whole thing, so you don't have to. But it actually was a good read. So we'll get to all that. But first, we have to get the charts up on the screen. Joel, how are we doing on this Tuesday morning?
Well, you had a small dip yesterday. Now a dip is any time that the S&Ps are red, even by a tick. No, we're down. We're up 2250. Spent a little time beneath the close. Snuck into the 4500 handle. 0450 is your high. Your next daily high, that's coming up at 09.25. That's your September 10th high. Crude's doing okay, too, up 76 cents at 82.44, challenging the high of the move from yesterday. You have silver catching a bit, up 65 cents at 23.92. Bitcoin, that's up 7.55 at 62,405. Ethereum, that's up, too, $37 at 3,811.50. So Triple D, boring after hours, huh? Did you have much
slow? It was really slow last night. We had like a 3-point S&P range for the better part of 3 hours. It was just nothing happening. A little bit of more movement. It's been kind of a straight up climb here overnight. Again, buy the dip, wins the day yesterday. I was hoping for a little bit bigger dip, but I did get down and dirty, reallocating the long-term portfolio, doing a few things. So what I was doing yesterday was trading in utility stocks for bank stocks in the Canadian side, not the U.S. side. Some of these Canadian bank stocks haven't really run that much in the
give me a symbol. BNS.
Yeah, I bought a bunch of this in my long-term retirement account yesterday. I sold a stock called Canadian Utilities, which is a big utility company in Canada. My thought process here, obviously this is the long-term hat on, is that if inflation is sticky, I believe it is, that's not good for, you know, instruments, investment vehicles that are just basically dividend, and which is a utility stock. I think the Canadian Utilities is like a 4.7 or 4.8% dividend. I was like, I'm not sitting around in there to just collect 4.7% inflationary environment. I'm going to actually go over to Bank of Nova Scotia, which gives me a 4.42% dividend, almost as nice, but with the upside of participating in appreciation if interest rates do start to creep up. So that was my thought process yesterday. So I was doing a little bit of buying in the Canadian banks. I also bought a bank called Laurentian Bank, which is in Quebec. So I don't believe that's traded over here, so you won't be able to see that one. But just getting down and dirty, getting a little more exposure for if we do get into a rising interest rate environment.
I think Laurentian, you know what? Laurentian does trade in the U.S., Dennis.
Laurentian Bank does?
The ticker is LRCDF.
Yeah, whenever they have more than four symbols, and I just don't. So yeah, LRCDF, I guess, is what I was buying yesterday.
That's not bad.
And I think it's got like a 5% dividend. It's got a pretty nice one too. So you're getting the dividend again, getting exposure to banks, because I just feel like we're in this environment that inflation is not going to just magically go away. And I do believe that eventually, especially if the market continues to rise, the Fed's going to have to do something about it.
John Dawson in the chat says John Dawson loves Laurentian Bank. I don't know if he's if he works there or if he's a customer.
Maybe
he's
from Quebec. There's a lot of these in Quebec, I believe. I don't know. I think they're in Ontario.
I've been to the Laurentian Mountains. Where
is Laurentian Bank headquarters?
I went to a horseman's convention outside of Montreal, L'Astrel. You ever been there? That was probably 70s or 80s. That's a long time ago.
The headquarters is in Montreal.
Montreal.
We're getting exposure to some French banks, but I think they're English as well.
So, all right,
more exposure to banks. All I wanted was more exposure to banks. I was trying to look at the charts and look at a few of the Canadian banks that haven't just ripped and roared. I mean, Royal Bank is really why is that one? It's really had a run here. So we never give Canadian banks the love we should. There's like five of them that.
What about European banks? Have we been looking at theirs? Where's Deutsche Bank? I'm gonna guess Deutsche Bank is at $12.
Double digits is my guess.
13. Woo!
It was a pretty good guess. It was a pretty good guess.
Remember when that was going out of business?
That almost happened. Yeah. That almost happened. I remember
there was a lot of banks almost
being in the office that I remember in the office that day, Anthony Laverde said, "This is just like how it was with Bear Stearns." And then in terms of the trading that day. Anyway, okay. So I want to talk about this SEC report for a minute, and then we can move on. But I read the whole thing, so you don't have to. Actually, I do think it was a pretty interesting read. Even if you know what happened in January and February, and you were there, and you followed the story the entire time, it was still an interesting read, I thought. You could just skip to the last page and see the conclusions, but if you're into this stuff, which I am, then I think you might actually enjoy reading it. A couple of takeaways that I had, from the SEC had. Number one, off-exchange trading volume, the SEC thinks that's a problem, right? They talked a lot about that, how not all retail order flow gets to the market. We know this, Dennis. You obviously have been complaining about that for, I don't know, a decade. So
yeah, I think it's 12 years.
Yeah. This is an interesting stat, and I can pull up a chart here in a second. The increases in price coincide. This is I'm reading now, a direct quote. The increases coincide with a sharp increase in the number of individual accounts actively trading GME. By January 27th, the number of unique accounts trading GME on any given day increased from less than 10,000 at the beginning of January to nearly 900,000. Where's that chart? Let me pull it up for you. This is a chart that shows the number of active accounts.
How many accounts were trading it?
As many as 900,000.
Oh, in the beginning. So where did it come from?
Oh, from it started here. So like, I don't know, what is that, like 10,000? No, less than that. Wow. Yeah.
It just shows you how much this retail movement, when they get on a stock, how much influence the retail traders have.
Yeah.
It's absolutely amazing to see that chart. That's really cool.
Incredible. Incredible. And you can see, so the green is institutions and hedge funds. So that increased, but not nearly to the extent that the retail accounts increased. So I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah. That chart tells the whole story. I mean, this was the buzz. This was the hype. This is, you know, the whole reason behind it.
Yep. The SEC point out that there are some hedge funds that lost money and other hedge funds that made money. So if you're thinking this was like, you know, the populist movement, the little guy gets it at the expense of the big guy. Well, some hedge funds made money too. So not quite like
that. I'm
sure
they did.
GameStop did experience some fails to deliver, but not enough to indicate there was any naked short selling. So that might have some people upset. SEC thinks that clearing needs to be a lot faster. The T+2 could contribute to the problem. SEC thinks that needs to be improved. The ETFs, right? XRT and Gamer, GAMR, which both hold GameStop, and both do we have a typo in our chart? Sorry, in the graphics. Sorry, guys. The ETFs did a really good job. They're their spreads got wider. They traded a little bit premium to NAV, but other than that, they did a pretty good job of handling the increase in demand for GameStop.
And we know at the peak, I talked about this on Saturday, that I believe GameStop and the XRT, which is equally weighted, meaning that adjusts, they're supposed to stay equally weighted, but it only rebalances quarterly. So obviously any movement in January, February is going to be rebalanced until March. I believe at the peak that GME was almost 20% of XRT, up from 0.8%.
Yeah, something like
That's just incredible.
Yep. As the month went on, an increasing percentage of volume in GameStop actually, like the percentage of GameStop trading that happened off exchange is higher than the SEC thinks it should be. But as the month went on, that percentage actually went down because nobody wanted to take the risk.
Yeah, they were right? Shipping it.
Right, exactly. So here's a chart that actually shows short
interest. Say that again from the beginning.
So the amount of GameStop trading volume that happened off exchange is higher than the SEC wants it to be. So on January 21st, GameStop opened at 39 and closed at 43. So nothing really crazy there. 62% of that day's dollar volume was executed off exchange. That was on the 21st. Okay. On the 28th, a week later, when GameStop opened at 265 and went to 193, so like this is like peak craziness, right? Yeah. The percentage of GameStop dollar volume that trade off exchange got below down to 32%.
Yeah.
Right? Because nobody, Citadel and all that, they didn't want it.
Citadel was actually, they said they kept making markets. They may be one of the few, but you got to think as a market maker, you're trying to make the spread. And when it starts to get just nutty and you see things just lifting like that, it's the same thing as when we had the flash crash where I was like, oh, and all of a sudden the off exchange market makers don't want to make markets because there's too much risk. So literally you got to a situation where GameStop was rising so quickly, you probably had a lot of off exchange market makers saying, no, we're not going to trade that. I mean, that's been my argument all along with off exchange market making is that they provide ample liquidity 99.9% of the time, but during times of, price, when prices are really going crazy or prices are falling drastically, they can just stop making markets. Now, as apparently Citadel did not, at least what Ken Griffin said, obviously. So maybe they were the 32% that kept making markets, but there was probably a few off exchange market makers that said, we're just not going to make markets in GameStop today.
Yep. You want to see the short interest in GameStop actually like charted out? I thought this is interesting. Take a look at that drop. So this is when the short interest was over 100%, right? End of January. And then boom, come crashing back down to earth in February. Which I thought was interesting. Okay, some high-level conclusions here from the report, and then we'll
short interest actually fell dramatically.
Yes, that's what that chart is showing.
Yeah. And that makes sense too, because you got firms like Citron, Andrew Left's, who are short on fundamentals, saying, "Well, this is disconnected from fundamentals completely, so I'm just not going to participate in this."
Yep.
And this is my argument too. I just want to say one more thing. Go ahead. Finish your thoughts, and I got some
thoughts. So conclusions from the report. There was four. Essentially, the forces that can cause a firm to restrict trading are complicated, and there's not any one reason. Consideration should be given to whether game-like features and celebratory animations that are likely intended to create positive feedback from trading lead investors to trade more than they would otherwise. In addition, payment for order flow and the incentives it creates may cause broker-dealers to find novel ways to increase customer trading. This is nothing new here, right? Including through the use of digital engagement. Yeah, there's nothing new there. Trading in dark pools and through wholesalers, the SEC, like I said, thinks it's too high. Right, much of the retail order flow in GME was purchased by wholesalers and executed off exchange. Such trading interest is less visible to the wider market and may raise questions about execution quality investors receive. We know this, and those were kind of the big takeaways. So, nothing really new, but like I said, if you're into this kind of stuff, it was a good read.
Did you read the footnotes?
Oh no. Half the report was footnotes. I guess I should.
Well, no, because I like stuff that we said like 6-8 months ago. I mean, this is like repeating a lot of the stuff that we said when we had people on, and we had Bill Hartz on, and we had different people to talk about market structure. Dennis has been writing about this stuff for a decade. So good job by the SEC. I don't see what, you know, I think that the biggest thing that came out of it, you know, you talk about these stocks running, you know, whatever, meme stocks, it brought a whole new group of investors to the market. And for what they're trading and what they're doing is their choice and is their money. We did have some people in the in our class on Saturday that said, hey, they had a great run in those stocks and they gave it all back. And now that, you know, because they're waiting for that to happen again. They're waiting for that to happen again. It may happen again. Just the probability is a little bit less than, you know, doing, you know, other ways to trade.
This has happened in other stocks. Like, this is not the first time. I mean, we went, you know, all out because GameStop. But this happens when newer companies come and the buzz happens. Bring up Tilray. I mean, this has happened before. Tilray, this happened. This is what Tilray did. Bring it up. Bring up the chart and go back to
it. Do they even do it after... Go ahead.
They have the Afria, so I'm not sure what after the merger. Yeah. But my chart still shows it. Stock went from $20 to $300 in the matter of about a week and a half. This stuff does occur. So it is not out of the realm of possibilities that you can get just these crazy moves. And do you want to know the main reason behind these crazy moves? And this is not even speculation. This is just, you know, common sense. It's the lack of shorting that is behind these crazy moves combined with increased demand. It's right back to, you know, what Tim would say too on his stuff. You have you got to ask yourself a question as a fundamental trader, and you're seeing price completely disconnect. Think about Andrew Left, who shorted GameStop, Citron, shorted GameStop at 40. At 80, he said, I'm out. It doesn't make sense anymore. So you have all the fundamental traders that would normally short, you know, Chainos, you know, maybe he stays short on some stuff, but you have a lot of fundamental traders that are like, okay, this is too disconnected. I can't short. So now you lose all that supply. You have increased demand from the huge buzz. Combine those two and you get this rocket ship mode that happens. We see this happen when stocks get hard to locate and the shorts can't keep the prices in line. Because shorts provide a very valuable service to the market. They keep prices in check. So, yes, it probably did start as a bit of a short squeeze. And then the shorts, with that chart that you showed, Spencer, the short volume dropped dramatically because, one, whoever was short, it got the hell out and probably took a big loss earlier. Yep. And then, two, no new shorts were coming in. I mean, Bright Trading, our company, actually came out and didn't allow you to short that stock. Like, even though we could find a locate, they made an internal rule that none of our traders were allowed to short that stock for about 3 weeks.
Wow.
Because of the risk. We, you know, you didn't know where it was going to go, and they didn't want a trader blowing out. So we just banned that stock. And Bright Trading is rare to do that. But because the risk was so high, the firm had a discussion, actually banned trading in that stock.
Wow.
So that's what you have to understand is, it's all supply and demand. Right back to what Tim always talks about on Monday. We got supply and we have demand. When demand increases substantially and you don't have the supply, and the supply, obviously, we even know off-exchange market makers from your stats weren't, some of them weren't willing to provide liquidity on the short side. And you have no fundamental traders providing liquidity on the short side. You have very few shares that are willing to sell, and everybody thinks it's going to the moon. And that's why the drastic rise happens. Shorts keep price in check. That doesn't fit the narrative of what everybody wants to hear, but that's the reality of how the markets really work. Because we see this in some cases where all of a sudden, like the Viacom, remember the VIA, Joel? It explodes away from VIAC and everybody's like, what's going on? Well, there's no shorts. Nobody can locate, so there's no ARBs to keep the prices in check. So if you can't get the locate, you can't borrow the stock, you can't, you know, and if you do naked shorting, it is illegal. And you will be fined as a prop trader and possibly worse. You'll lose your license or even go to jail. There are stiff fines. Is there firm still doing naked shorting? Apparently there is a few still, but it's on the radar. I mean, I can tell you, you have to be very careful if you're a professional trader and you're doing naked short selling because your broker's looking for it. The regulators are looking for it. There's a lot of people looking for it. Does it still exist in some smaller firms that maybe don't have good compliance? Possibly. You know, but I'm not going to speculate on what's happening in other firms. I'm just saying, in some of these instances, when you see these crazy moves higher, it's actually the people who are not willing to provide liquidity on the sell side, either selling their longs or shorting the stock, that contribute to the high rise because the demand and supply is way out of whack.
Have they ever banned another stock before?
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've had it from time to time, but not I don't remember in a long time that and all of a sudden we have a memo out to our traders, you can't trade that stock.
You know what?
And the reason for that is we don't want one trader getting involved. When stocks are moving around and going crazy and disconnected from fundamentals to 100 to 300 and everybody's, you know, and the buzz is going on. I think it was only on the short side too. Joel, I don't know if it was banned. I don't think it was banned altogether. Maybe it was. I can't even remember now, my goldfish memory, but...
Sometimes I just want to make one other comment.
Be careful when you're running a firm, you know, that you don't want your traders blown
out. One person bring it down. Also, being a market maker, okay?
Yeah, Joel was a market maker, so take it back.
You're getting run over with buyers, okay?
Yeah.
And you're just not, I mean, eventually you're saying, okay, man, you can't beat them, join them. And if you don't think that some of these hedge funds and these market makers made a ton on the long side, too.
Well, they did.
I mean, it's there. It's airport. You know, you're getting buyers at 10,000, buyers at 10,000, buyers, you know, all of a sudden you short 50,000, you get another buyer for 50,000. I mean, there is a point where, you know, the market makers do that. So they made some money on the long side. And then when it gets, then in the middle of the day, when it's just at, you know, it's just moving two, three, $4 at a time, they're like on the bid and they're offering, they're taking that retail, they're going bing, 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 and printing money. So a lot of dynamics there. I don't know really what's going to come out of this, but it's interesting to discuss. Spencer, yeah. I'll give you kudos for reading that whole thing. I don't, Dennis, like, you haven't read it yet, have you?
And you know what? Spencer just read it for us and gave us the outline. I've got a feel for it, so I probably won't read it.
We're going to cheat. We're going to sit next to Spencer in class.
There really wasn't a lot new. Someone in the chat was asking about like Robinhood specifically. The SEC didn't say anything that Robinhood didn't already say with regards to why they restricted the buying. And someone asked about the short interest in GameStop. I'm seeing 12%, so that's not insane or anything like that. That's relatively normal for GameStop, actually. So the SEC, it didn't say anything really that new. It was just interesting to get some color on the situation. That's all I'll say. The SEC agrees with Dennis, apparently, that you know, the market is too decentralized.
Did you read the bibliography?
No, like I said, the report is 45-page report. Half it was footnotes, so I skipped all the footnotes. So I guess
we're leaking here. Do we have any? Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say we're leaking because I mean we're 8 points off the high. Dennis will yell at me.
Yeah,
we're down 8 points off the high. We got up to 0450. So that's a decent number. Now we backed off 8 points. I'm not sure what the reason is.
I don't know. Let's move on here. Bitcoin ETF opens today. ProShares Bitcoin Strategy ETF, BITO, is your ticker. Your NAV, your net asset value, is $40. So that's kind of someone, you know, someone at Benzinga asked, where's it going to open? Probably somewhere around 40. Probably a little bit higher than that because it's going to be open at a premium, I would assume. But somewhere, in theory, it should trade around $40.
What do you think the volume is going to be today?
You want to make a bet on that?
I think it's going to be huge. Probably, I think it's going to be big.
Okay, people were asking like, who is this for? Who is this Bitcoin futures ETF for? If you already trade Bitcoin, if you already have Bitcoin, if you already have a wallet, a Coinbase account, whatever, this is not for you. I mean, you can do it. You can buy it. You can trade it. But it's not for – you're not the target audience. The target audience here is anyone who does not know or does not care to know to how to open like a Coinbase account or get a crypto wallet or even trade futures for that matter. This is the simplest way to – get cryptocurrency exposure aside from owning a mining stock, right? Amara or a Riot. This is the other than that, this is the easiest way to get direct Bitcoin exposure. And not even that, you're getting exposure to Bitcoin futures. It's kind of one degree removed. But I'm with you, Joel. I think this is going to trade serious volume today. I don't know how much. It's I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a new thing. I mean, I'm sure people are going to be. I mean, maybe they'll give it a day to shake out or something. And it and the ARBs are going to be in there with, you know, with the futures and cash. I mean, the thing to me is that the beauty of the Bitcoin market, it's a 24-hour market, 24/7. Yeah. There's, you know, no gaps, right? Yeah. I mean, it closes at mid. I mean, that's a big difference. How's Coinbase doing? This really wouldn't be good for Coinbase, would it? I talked to somebody that because
you bring
active.
The trading on to the exchange, as
maybe
opposed to having to go through Coinbase.
Yeah, I guess not.
I kind of agree with you, Joel. It's been motoring. I mean, Coinbase is because of Bitcoin. I mean, these obviously are Bitcoin related instruments. If you bring up any of these things, it's going to move with the price of Bitcoin. So, you know, Bitcoin rally coinciding nicely, obviously, with the big move in Coinbase. You can bring them all up. Riot Blockchain obviously had a rating, but it's moved up, you know, the last couple
Riot
of days.
Has a, Mara Riot, has
been, Riot's been the laggard. Yep. Riot's been the laggard. I'm not sure why. I don't follow the stock closely enough, but it's definitely lagged.
I don't know.
You know, and then there's MSTR, all these Bitcoin stocks.
That's like an ETF.
We got our buddy. I own Hive. That's obviously our buddy who got the Jets ETF, Frank Holmes, who I just like Frank Holmes, and I wanted to have some exposure to crypto mining. I believe Frank is one of the smartest people in the business, so that's why I put Hive in my long-term portfolio. Yeah, I'm a hodling Hive. I've been in it for a while. I've actually been all over the place in this. I'm averaged in Canadian dollars, but it's around 250 US. It was up to 350 quickly. I was like, oh, Frank's my hero. And then he's down 250. I was like, oh, Frank. That's why I got 350. I'm feeling good again. So anyways, trying not to look at it, trying to hodl it. Hodling Hive just for Frank. And that's speculative capital only.
Someone in the chat asked, how is BITO is your ticker. They asked how that's different from the Grayscale, the GBTC. They're different, like their legal, their regulatory structure is different. GBTC is technically a trust. It also doesn't trade on exchanges. So if you use a broker like Robinhood, for example, that doesn't let you buy securities that don't trade on the NASDAQ or the NYSE, you can't get the GBTC on Robinhood. Also, the GBTC holds physical Bitcoin in cold storage. This ETF does not actually hold any Bitcoin. It only holds Bitcoin futures contracts that mirror the price of the movements of the Bitcoin market. But it's just a different regulatory thing. It's a different vehicle. And like I said, the point here is to open the doors to, you know, your average investor who does not know or want to know how, doesn't know anything about wallets, doesn't care, but just want some Bitcoin in their 401k maybe, or right. You know what I mean?
I wonder if the premium, I mean, look at that thing. Look at GBTC. I mean, it had that huge premium the entire time, and it's still just trying to work that out. Look at it. What's the old time high in this? What? 56, 57. And it's 46.
The spread has not come in. That's interesting.
We got to get Michael. Can we send email to Michael Sunshine? He's always great to talk to.
We can get Michael.
And let's start the try and get Yusko on again.
We can do that. Yeah. We can do that for sure. So,
do we want to talk stocks here for a few minutes?
Yeah.
We can talk some stocks.
I tried to bring it to stocks.
We can talk stocks.
Spencer's the producer. Spencer, where's that little thing on the side that says what we're supposed to do here?
We can talk. Tuesday earnings is next on the list. We can do it. Let's talk earnings.
Let's go.
We got Procter & Gamble. We got Johnson. Let's start with P&G. That's more interesting to me than the J&J.
Did they say anything about supply chain problems?
Find out. Their earnings per share beat, their sales beat, they maintained. Hey, actually maintaining guidance is pretty good in this environment.
Consumer product stock.
Because you just don't know. They announced price increases across their
beauty. Don't have inflation. We're only running 2%.
Yeah.
Increase on beauty, oral care, grooming products. I guess just three things, maybe. Hopefully just three things. That's what it says in the pro.
Guy they had on CNBC was pretty good with the questions. I mean, you could tell, they had the prompter up, and then, they would ask the question, and then they stuck the answer up there. And what he said was, it's
wait,
good.
Wait, what? Did you say that he put his answer up on a teleprompter?
No. Just the way he was, you could just tell, when people are, giving answers to stuff, whether it's, coming from their heart. You know, I'm just speculating here. Anyways, he said the bright side is, higher prices, you know, and maybe live. But that means demand is strong, and demand is strong, and that's good. So that was the argument. He said there were some supply chain, you know, issues and stuff, but it was just a signal of strong demand, and strong demand is good.
Wait a minute. I said that the other week, I think last week. I said everyone is going to say, oh, yes, prices are going up in inflation because we have strong high demand. And we're not going to know. There's going to be no way for us to know whether that's true or not, right? Like, we're only going to know in like 6 months or a year who is actually lying about the demand increases and who is strong demand and who is not. Everyone's going to say the same thing. Yes, 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 demand is strong. It's why we're raising our prices. But we're not going to know. We don't know.
Just under 139 is a pair of lows. That's all I'm going to give you from a technical standpoint here. Going back, I mean, I don't even know if you're going to get there. 138.67 splits a pair of lows from October 5th, October 6th.
All right, let's go to the J&J.
What's the bottom of yesterday's range? 142.10, if you're trying to wiggle out.
I don't want to concede with staple stocks in this environment. Same thing as utilities. It's just, you know, there's so many reasons not to own these things. If you think inflation's going away, maybe, you know, you do want to own this stuff. I don't think inflation's going away.
Johnson & Johnson earnings per share beat, sales beat, and a guidance raise, an EPS and a sales guidance raise for the entire fiscal year here. And that comes
out of favor.
It comes on the backs of their getting their booster shot approved, and the FDA is apparently going to announce that you don't need to get the same booster as your vaccine.
Drug stocks are all hated right now. And then at Johnson & Johnson is like the drug consumer staples combo.
Yeah, so that's true.
It is. And, you know, this chart is, you know, got a lot of people who are caught in the last couple of weeks. I don't want to own this one either. There's just, you know, and it all depends on your views on inflation. I mean, we've been talking about inflation for a bit, and maybe we get to a point where inflation starts to cool off, and then some of these stocks will become a lot more attractive. So, but right now I just don't see, you know, cooling off really anywhere. I see everybody using as an excuse for everything. So just to jack prices on you. And we've got Procter & Gamble raising prices on a bunch of stuff today. So these are the types of stocks that don't work well in an inflationary environment. They are oversold, though. We'll give them that.
It's a very good point you make, Dennis, because Johnson & Johnson, we always talk about it within the context of drugs, but they do so much more than drugs. They do they're staples. They do shampoo and things like that. So
all kinds of stuff.
All kinds of stuff.
It's a great company. Yeah, it's a great company. And if it got down to like the 140 area, I'd probably get down and dirty just because at a certain point in time it's cheap enough. But I don't think you need to chase this one.
Trading range 158 to 162. You're just about in the middle here.
Trivia question for Joel. Where is Johnson & Johnson headquartered? Now you know how it feels.
New Jersey.
Yes, New Brunswick, New Jersey.
Nice, Spencer.
One town over from where I grew up.
Nice.
I only know the Michigan. You know, every time I say that, it's how's Lazy Boy doing in this inflation? I haven't checked Lazy Boy in a while. But let me see. All right, side tangent there. Okay, what else do we have for earnings?
Well, yeah, like Halliburton, if you want to go there. We're going to have Ivan Fossett on in a second. Halliburton. Yeah,
Halliburton.
Yeah, what's the chart doing? I didn't look today.
Oh, this is interesting because the reason I say interesting, I'm looking at the bottom right chart here. I'm looking at the monthlies, pair of monthly highs at just over 25. This was pre-pandemic, 25. Let's call it 25 and a half. You broke above that. I mean, it's taking its sweet old time following it, but breakout on the monthly holds 25 and a half. I see more upside Halliburton.
Wow, Halliburton almost at 30. Anyway,
can you believe that?
No,
I mean,
no, I can't.
Jeez, don't tell people that own Halliburton that oil, you know, moved $80, $70 off the low.
Yeah. It's come back a long way since those, though. But I mean, if you go out to the monthly on Halliburton, the $70 we got back to in 2014 seems like a pipe dream at this point in time.
All right, it is 8:35. Let's bring on today's guest, Ivan Fineseth, partner and chief investment officer at Tigress Financial Partners. Ivan, good morning, sir. Oh, wait, you're on mute. Unmute that mic there.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There we go. Good morning, sir.
How are you?
Good. How are we doing today?
Very good. Always happy to be here with you guys.
Always happy to have you on. Ivan, what is on your – what is top of mind for you right now? Are you all about the earnings or
– Oh, yeah, because, you know, August, September, there were no earnings. There were no stock catalysts. So all the market did was focus on the Fed, maybe tapering – inflation, the dysfunction in Washington. There was nothing to go on, and the market was just drifting lower. And I said, as soon as the earnings start, and I believe this is going to be an incredible earnings season, that the market will turn around. And I'm still expecting a strong rally into year end. I still maintain my 4,600 to 4,650 year end price target on the S&P 500. And I think we will more than get there. And the most exciting thing yesterday about Apple's event to me was not the incredible MacBook Pro and Mac that they introduced, or even these new AirPods, but the fact that these things were announced yesterday, they're taking orders today, they will be available next week, which goes to, again, negate all of these people out there who try to call out Apple to say, oh, iPhone sales are not going to be what they were, that they're going to be impacted by chip shortages. Apple obviously said yesterday, in between the lines, there's no shortage problem. If they're launching new products ahead of the holiday season, then they have to believe that there will be, you know, more than enough supply. And I still say that Apple will have a record holiday quarter, December quarter. I think that they will beat last year's record of $111.5 billion by at least 15%, if not 20% this quarter.
So why are you also optimistic on earnings? You just think it's just all this pent-up demand?
Yeah. Because Ivan's an optimistic glass half full.
He's been optimistic since 1929.
By the way, I know no successful and no wealthy pessimists. To me, it's just a fact. But I like the fact that you cannot manufacture demand, but you can always manufacture more supply. And so many CEOs, Frank Del Rio, the CEO of Norwegian Cruise Lines, has said on a number of conference calls, he said, I worry about a lot of things. Demand is not one of them. Now, think about that. It's powerful. So the consumer is flush. We are near record and, you know, low unemployment at 4.8%. Wages are up. Consumer balance sheets are strong. There's pent-up demand to travel and purchase and get out and do things. And that is a phenomenal backdrop. And if all that's holding back is supply, which I don't really know if that's as bad. I mean, I think, unfortunately, companies that may miss earnings may point to supply chain as the, for the blame. If they may not have strong, you know, not every company, unfortunately, has strong demand. We know Apple certainly does. The cruise industry is experiencing strong. The travel industry is. And a lot of things are. But, again, not everybody can.
All right. We're getting too positive, and it's making me sick.
Yeah, what don't you like? What don't you like,
that was,
Ivan?
That was going to be my question.
What's going to go up less than everything else, Ivan?
All right. Well, I've liked Albertsons. They've done a great job. I downgraded the stock at $28 from a buy to a hold because it hit my price target. And they had a great quarter. They're doing well. The CEO is good, doing a good job. They raised the dividend, which is always a positive. However, the valuation is kind of stretched. It's still just a grocery store chain. And I think both consumer focus will shift from at-home dining to outside dining once outdoor, you know, I mean, in-restaurant dining, as well as spending money on other things. And I also do believe we're going to see a record holiday season.
What's the symbol on that?
That's ACI.
ACI.
Yeah, I know the other one was, what's that propane company that we talked about a long time ago? I think Raz mentioned it, that the propane gas company.
There's the company that makes those is going public. the outdoor stoves and the lamp. But again, those are kind of niche things. Yes, when restaurants open, you know, restaurants were saved by delivery and outdoor dining and takeout. And certainly as it got colder, especially in you know, areas where it gets colder in the fall, they bought these like these stand-up heaters. So they
could put maybe it in the maybe SPH, Joel, SPH maybe.
I think it is.
Try SPH. Yeah,
but those are kind of fads and trends to me.
Yeah,
I want companies with long-term,
okay,
stable growth that have unique market niches that are defendable, and strong brand equity, and unique attributes that drive customer loyalty and customer demand.
Okay, we found something that Ivan is not jumping up and down for, and it's grocery stores. But other
Kroger than doesn't look good here.
Kroger?
It's sold off. I mean, it's really gotten
here. Well, but my favorite Staples retailer is Costco.
Okay.
Costco.
And because they shifted, by the way, when consumers needed Staples, they went to Costco. And Costco sells a lot of discretionary purchases as well. And look, they're noted for selling a $65,000 collectible baseball and bat. And a $200,000 diamond. And so you never know what you're going to find at Costco, which is part of their unique shopping experience.
Wait, what?
They sold a collectible baseball and bat for each like $60,000 or $65,000. They have diamonds. They have they've had fancy watches, Rolex, and
actually, I remember seeing a story. I remember seeing a story like 10 or 15 years ago, and I think it was like 60 Minutes or something, and they just like, maybe it wasn't, but they just compared the diamonds at Costco to the diamonds at like some fancy jeweler, and they took it to some expert, and they didn't tell him what was what, and he was like, yeah, these diamonds from Costco are pretty good, actually.
Well, but diamonds, you know, have their grading and category, and somewhat, they're not man-made, so they come from nature, if you will,
There's one thing you won't find at Costco. There's one thing you won't find at Costco, and that's the onion grinder to put, you know, they used to have that thing up on the wall for your hot dogs because of COVID. Okay. They got rid of that, but that was pretty good.
The onion, yes, they just said they brought back relish and that onion thing. Yes,
Joel, you got to go to Costco.
Joel, I'll see you there on Saturday.
It is back. I mean, it was sad when they, you know, because of the pandemic, they got rid of the food court. They got rid of sampling. And then when they came back and they had people who normally did the sampling having displays. And I said, you know, this is sampling without sampling.
All right. But okay.
They have been a post. You know that we are in a post-pandemic world when Costco brings back sampling.
Okay. Ivan, I understand that you are bullish. Can you give me one scenario, something that would have to happen for your S&P year-end target or for your estimations for earnings for that not to happen? What would have to happen?
Oh, there's some, you know, we're in October, Halloween is coming, and there's some scary things out there. And the number one thing that scares me is oil. Okay. You know, friends from California send me pictures of gas stations showing that gasoline is $5, $6, and in some cases $7 a gallon. I mean, that could derail on a number of cases. Unfortunately, we were a few years back awash in oil, and President Biden cut back pipelines, cut back production, and it's caused a rise in oil prices. And the other thing is, it's not only high prices, because, you know, consumers, while they don't like paying for gasoline, as long as it's available, it's okay. And then you add to that shortages, and we've heard that there could be natural gas shortages in Europe, and that China is going to start to have to ration energy, and that could be further disruption to supply chains. What caused the weakness in the market when we started this week, yesterday morning, was the fact that China GDP came in at 4.9, not the 5.3 expected, and they were supposedly energy issues. So, I mean, energy is important, and I think it's a long time coming till we get to electric cars, but it's exciting about the number of electric car choices that we will have available by this time next year. But energy is a scary thing.
right. Well, we'll have to get Ivan back on when we're the next time that we feel like downright terrified about the market. So we get Ivan back on and reassure us that everything will be okay. And then everything is fine. And we're going to new highs by the end of the year because you are nothing if not consistent, Ivan. I can't remember ever you be coming on our show and being anything other than bullish. And hey, you've been mostly right. So it's paid to be.
Markets at highs has been all right.
Yeah, you're right. He's been all right. It, you know, glass half full, and hey, it works. So, Ivan Feinseth, CIO at Tigris Financial Partners. Ivan, a pleasure as always, sir. Thanks a lot.
Always great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Ivan.
He's always so positive. It kind of makes me sick in a way. You know what I mean?
Makes you feel better.
Kind of makes me sick.
You've been positive too, and you've been right here. Pat yourself.
Yes, Spencer.
I'm
Spencer. 100 S&P points ago, you're like, we're going to make new all time highs by the end.
No,
of the year.
Yeah, you've been but right too. Yeah, but there's a difference between like thinking that like the stock market is going to make a new all time high and just being a generally positive person. I'm generally a pessimistic person.
Yeah, I am too. I need like to people tell me that in the chat all the time.
Like, okay, I have one bullish call out there, but I. In the rest of my life, I'm pessimistic. Okay.
Yeah, so, me too. So kind of, we need to be surrounded by more optimistic people.
I've always been told I'm too negative. I've always been. Jason tells me all the time I'm a too negative.
It's Spencer. It's not. No, it's just your. You know, people have different personality traits.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
Know?
Yeah. So, yep. You're right. Anyway. Okay. What else do we have today? I saw the someone mentioned Merck in the chat. I saw the Merck headline, right? That there was a group affiliated with the World Health Organization that's going to buy the COVID pill.
Trying to fill that gap.
Sell it. I'm long it. Completely talking against my buck, and obviously it's not investment advice because I'm holding it long term. But as a trade, 2-point rally in Merck. Been going down. I think it's a selling opportunity for you traders out there. I'm holding my Merck. Yeah, still holding the stock that I bought a decade ago.
You guys want a level of levels in this one. Your pre-market high 79.74. If you don't think the folks that were selling at 79.66 and 67 on October 13th and 14th weren't palms out at that level, let's see if we get back up there. But that looks like great resistance today. Already starting to leak about 60 cents.
Do you want to talk Macy's for a second here? Joel and I discussed this at the close, but Dennis, we didn't get your thoughts on the Macy's report that they're going to IPO their Saks Fifth Avenue business, which is at this point basically entirely e-commerce. That was a headline yesterday. That's
what drives the price like this. I mean, this investors just want a story. Saks Fifth Avenue, which, you know, obviously was traded at one time and SKS. Basically it didn't make it. Now they're going to bring it back. I find it hard to get that excited about this story. I think it's another selling opportunity. But again, we know my strategy. Buy the dips, sell the rips. This is a hell of a rip. Maybe it has continuation here. Maybe when it actually does spin it off, maybe there's another bump. But wow, I can't believe they tacked on that much for that news.
Yeah, I think with the kind of move that it had, and also on a historical basis, you got to put a lot of emphasis on the close 28.25 and at high 28.41. Now being down 60 cents, I'm sure a lot, if I could just get out at the mark. So right there, probably a mound of paper at 28.50 as well. We haven't been up here since, 2019? Wow. 31.90, 26.48. We already took that out. 31.99. Your January 2019 high.
For those wondering, there are 13. I didn't realize there was. Sorry, 15 Saks Fifth Avenue locations where you can actually rock up to the store and do some shopping.
There's still some stores out there.
There's not the one in Somerset anymore, is there?
No. Wait. There's one in Troy, Joel.
Well, that's Somerset.
Okay. Fine. Okay. Sorry.
Okay.
All right, it's ticker time here. Drop your questions in the chat. We will take a look at what you're looking at. What did we miss here this morning?
We didn't even talk Alibaba and their new chip.
We can do that.
They got a new chip to compete with Microsoft and Amazon. E-commerce got in the pop, got the 178, 170, 150. All those highs at 170. Let's see. Old resistance, new support.
Yeah. And Baba, you know, was massively oversold. We obviously got lucky calling the bottom on this one. I'm still long in the long-term account. This consolidation after a big move is usually to go higher. So I wouldn't be surprised if Baba could see actually one through that 180. It'll be tougher, 185. Not today, but I think the path of least resistance still higher for Alibaba. Still long in the long-term portfolio.
Wow, we got to take our swine now. So here, you know, someone ask, we get asked every day about this PaySafe.
We do.
We should talk at some
time. It's PSFE.
Well, you know what? I mean, we're combing the ditches looking for stocks that haven't gone yet. It's been a storied stock that the story has gone ice cold. The trend is absolutely horrible. So not much to like above that. But if it got above 807, maybe it gets a little bit more just everything, you know, rising tide lifts all ships type trade. There's a lot better looking charts out there. The trend is still clearly down, not even broken that downtrend. Above $8, it gets more interesting.
What about NIO?
I haven't looked at it in a long time. I haven't
looked at that one for a minute.
Oh, nice, nice, nice move yesterday. So now you start to think, okay, can we break this downtrend?
Did you call money, Mitch?
Did you call for Mitch?
Guys, listen, at the end of pre-market prep yesterday.
Yes, that's right. Mitch did say this. I can confirm. I was there.
Different areas to look at. Department stores, auto, specialty realtors, trucking, diversified industrials, and railroads.
In fairness, you mentioned NIO for like three. It was like 2 seconds at the end, I think. That's why I.
Anyways, nice call, Mitch. Yeah. I would be a buyer pullbacks, not buying 90-cent rip and a $3 rip yesterday. But on pullbacks here, interesting long term. You know, I'm talking from trading perspective. Long term, I still think there's too many EV companies, but short term, starting to look perky, starting to look a little more life there. I kind of like it. Oh,
what else we got? Can we please discuss Fastly? Okay, FSLY.
Holy.
Well, this is,
I don't know what to say.
RAG says he's in from 39.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
It's starting to trend higher. It needs to. Like it's run into resistance. It put a double top in the last couple of days, same area. It needs to get above there. So we need this thing above 46, and then you can start thinking above 50. Right now, my concern would be the little double top that we put in from the last 2 days. I don't want to see that hold on a third day. So today is a very important day for it. It needs to take up the two highs from the previous 2 days, and then it can resume its trend upwards. There is room to 50, but you know it's kind of when going up here, and you're starting to get into a little resistance area in this 45, 46 area.
I'm going to look at some tickers we don't talk about a lot, as contrary as that sounds. What about, we haven't talked Wayfair in a little bit. Maybe the other week we did, a couple weeks ago. W, how is W doing?
It's got the Zoom, it's got the Peloton problem where, you know, we're looking at reopening, and it's been one of those that benefited obviously from stay at home. You know, on the Saturday, I talked about the Zoom Peloton obviously underperforming because they're the stay at home stocks. Wayfair is a stay at home stock as well. So it has, you know, been hit from that. With that being said, it's come off, you know, quite significantly. It is a storied stock. And it is a little bit oversold. I still have trouble buying it here, one, because the trend is down, and two, because it's a stay-at-home play.
Hey, I want to make a quick public service announcement. If you are planning on flying somewhere this holiday season, you need to book your flights yesterday. I'm just putting that out there because I was doing some flight stuff last night. I think I'm going to fly to New Jersey for Thanksgiving, which is only 5 weeks away now, and it was insanity. Insanity. So if you're flying somewhere for the rest of the year, do your flight booking now. The prices are through the maybe it was just really? To New York, but flight prices were through the roof. Through the roof. Okay. You heard it here. Justin M says definitely. I don't know if he's talking to me or not, but you heard it here first, or maybe not first, but do it. Get that done if you're flying.
Cause I could get talked in some airlines. I've hated the airlines for a long time here, even the cruise lines. But you start thinking, you know, You do have holidays coming. You do have people who might anticipate this. We do have a little bit of a reopening feel happening, at least in the economy. Like, I don't know where the COVID numbers, I used to look at them daily, and I don't even look at them monthly anymore. You know, I think the fear of COVID has, you know, it's not as much as it was before. Could the cruise lines, which have been selling off, eventually get some life here? Could some of these airlines, Joel, that have been selling off? I mean, Southwest is straight down for a week and a half. Has it gotten to a point now where it's oversold? Not talking long-term portfolio, but just as trades. You know, can there be a bounce here eventually in some of this stuff? Asking you, Joel.
Joel, you're on mute. Is that why we haven't heard Joel for 10 minutes?
I thought Joel left the show. Wait a minute. I thought we were doing ticker time. I haven't heard Joel at all.
I'm like, wow, man. I'm like, these guys interrupt like crazy today. I'm like, what is there?
I am trying to figure out.
Me too.
I'm like, I say something and like Spencer's like talking about booking airlines. And I'm trying to give these people these levels.
Talk in 10 minutes.
I can't even forget all the levels I gave. I gave you guys so many good levels.
You gave all levels for all these stocks too.
And I'm like, I
was wondering where Joel went.
I'm like, what the hell is going on here?
Like, now I think you already left. I don't think
that might be the longest mute trick in the history of mute tricks. Southwest Airlines.
Can you get talked into any of these airlines?
Been bearish airlines before the pandemic.
Eventually, we got to get bullish, don't we?
No, why do you have to get bullish? I mean,
I don't know.
I feel like
I've overstayed my welcome being bearish the airlines.
I get stuck on these certain things. I think you need smaller planes. That's why people are asking about Boeing. I still think there's going to be plenty of air travel, but do you want to buy airlines with $82 crude? Unless they're doing some great hedging.
Good point there.
I mean, are they, you know, unless they're doing some sophisticated hedging. Also, I think, you know, you talk about, you know, behavior. Okay, and change. And, you know, yeah, we're coming out. People are like, I'm getting in my car and I'm going somewhere and I'm going camping. And I'm, you know, I mean, I think the over demand is going to come back. Business travel. What's business travel coming back?
Have this Spencer Israel. I'm booking my flights to go see my family. I haven't seen them in 2 years,
right.
But it didn't do it last Christmas. Do we potentially have that trade where we get this relief rally into the holiday season? Maybe we're early because we're still in October, but that's what my argument is because these things are sitting near the lows. A lot of them, you know, look at American Airlines, we're at $19. I mean, the low of the whole move is like $18. I don't think it's going back to 10. It just makes me think that maybe we're too early. Maybe we're too early yet for this holiday season trade. But when Spencer's talking, like, you know, the price tickets are going up, people are going to travel more this holiday season than they did last. Is there a lower bar in there? Are the expectations so low for the airlines that it's actually going to be easier for them to get over those expectations?
I mean, as long as people aren't, like, you know, brawling over, you know, masks and stuff and, you know, that, I mean, they're changing their, you know, whatever the mandates are. But, I mean, I didn't like flying before the pandemic, you know, so I'm probably the wrong person to be asking. I mean, it's very convenient when you got to go do things, and I definitely have done it, you know, probably a dozen times, you know, since we got out of COVID. It's just, but it's like, it's not in the, I think the business, I would say business travel and oil prices are two things.
All right, Joel, before you go, we need the dad joke of the day, and we need it for yesterday also.
The dad joke of the day.
Forget this.
This is kind of, and I do this too. Dad's saying, that's my little girl, even though their daughter's fully grown.
Okay.
Dads love to say they want to buy a smoker and learn to smoke meat. You know what?
What?
I don't know.
That is absolutely true.
Really? I let Lisa do the cooking. I love the grill. I got my propane tank. And then the one over the weekend, dads love camping in a tent in the backyard with the kids. That would not be me. When we go camping, we don't go camping because Lisa would set up the tent and do all the cooking. But I'm sorry about missing so many symbols. I'm going to hop over to Pre-Market Prep Plus and cover them for you all. And
Spencer, get over there.
Get over there. I'll see you later in the morning.
I see, Joel. I definitely have said I would like to buy a smoker and learn to smoke meat. But
I got you.
You got a smoker?
Wait, Weber. Should we all go along Weber?
I want to buy a Weber.
Yes.
My
Weber
parents
is top of the class.
No, my parents have this Weber that's like 30 years old, and it's still working. Wow, those Webers are good barbecues. Like I buy a barbecue and like it falls apart after 5 years because I buy the cheap one.
Those American made. That's why. You're going for that Chinese.
What's the other one? Traeger?
Oh, I go with the cheap ones, Mitch. Like the Walmart / Canadian Tire / Special, the one that's discounted from $600 to $300. I'm like, that's my barbecue. And then like after 5 years, it rusts out the bottom and just falls apart. The Weber still goes, man. I might get a Weber next time.
Yeah, let's take a look at Weber versus Cook real fast. They both have.
What's Cook? What's their brand?
That's Traeger.
Oh, that's Traeger.
Yeah. All right, they both have not been great since the
end. No, they haven't been great. You know what, Cook, whatever. We stopped going down, at least on Cook. I have not. That's the first time I've looked at this chart, maybe ever. So
I don't
mind. 1847 lows. There's not enough information. It's like 10 days of trading.
Yeah, well, a couple months of trading, but yes.
It feels like 10 days.
Feels like 10 days, yes. Okay, right. Dennis, have a good rest of your morning. And I hope today is a little bit more interesting. Yesterday sounded boring for you, so
it was somewhat boring.
It can't all be fun days. Hey, earnings tonight, by the way, guys. We got Netflix after the close. So what we're gonna do is we'll do the after close show, right? Joel and myself, and then at 4 o'clock, Mitch will hop on and we're gonna do like an after close earnings watch party. We're probably gonna do this every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, for the next few weeks because we've got Tesla tonight, like I said. I'm sorry, Netflix tonight, like I said. We got Tesla tomorrow night. Thursday night we have Snapchat, Chipotle, Intel, Whirlpool. So we're getting into it now. Tonight we also have United, Intuitive Surgical, Interactive Brokers, smaller name, but people care. I care a little bit. So that's what we're gonna do. We are in it now. We are in the earnings season. I call earnings season game day, right? You only get four game days per year. And this is game day for stock market because you actually get to know what these companies are doing. So it's an exciting time. Very, very fun stuff. Looking forward to it. What else we got today? We got David Green going live today at his usual time. Until his usual time, he'll go live from 9:20 to 9:25 to 11. SPAC's Attack has a good interview today. They're talking with my screen just froze. 1 second. They're talking with Pathfinder, the Pathfinder acquisition merger partner, which is PFDR is your ticker. ServiceMax is a company that is merging with PFDR. They're talking with the CEO of ServiceMax at 11:15 today, thereabouts. We got experimenting a little bit with the middle of the day a little bit. If you guys caught that yesterday, we're gonna start doing, I think, longer continuous streams, maybe from like 11 to 2 in the middle of the day. Mitch, myself, Aaron Bree. So check that out. Let us know what you think of that. We got the roadmap, our NFT show, guys. The level of heat in the NFT market is just like is dwarfing. Like the stock market is downright boring compared to what's going on in the NFT market. It is insanity. Some people at Benzinga, so like one of our video guys, has made like just an insane amount of money on these NFTs. It's like ridiculous.
We're doing it wrong, Spencer. We're doing it wrong.
We are doing it very, very, very wrong. And so if you don't know anything what's going on, you don't even know like what the biggest NFTs are, I recommend that show. 2 o'clock Eastern time every Tuesday and Thursday right here, youtube.com/BenzingaTV. Those guys are talking with the biggest names in the NFT space. And I'm telling you, it's insanity. It's like, it takes what happened with GameStop in January and it puts it on steroids. It's ridiculous. At the close, you know that myself, Joel, Mitch will be on, and then our Cannabis Insider Show at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time today. That's the plan. That's the play. And let me just check up on the chat. I know we missed a lot of tickers. I apologize. We'll cover more of them in the middle of the day in the At the Close shows. We're only at 292 likes. Let's get to 400. I think we can get to 400. I think let's not. Come on, we got 1,000 people watching this. I think we can get 400 likes. That's a reasonable. I would like more than that, but you know, like I said, glass half full kind of guy, or glass half empty kind of guy. 400 is a low bar to clear. We're at 300. Let's get to 4, everyone. Let's get to 4. Hey, as a reminder, I don't say this enough, but Benzinga Pro, right? It's Benzinga's real-time news platform. Get a free 2-week trial, pro.benzinga.com. I'll put the link up on the screen. If you have any questions about Benzinga Pro, just shoot an email to onboarding@benzinga.com. Those guys monitor that email 24/7. Again, free 2-week trial for everyone. No credit card, nothing needed like that. If you try it out. If you like it, great. If it's not, that's okay too. Won't take any offense to that. Oh, you can also use the offer code YouTube20 to get 20% off, by the way. YOUTUBE20 on the screen there. YouTube20. Let me check the chat. What else are we missing? Yeah, onboarding. That's right, Justin. Onboarding@benzinga.com. You got it right there in the chat. Hey, let me. I put the link in earlier. I'm going to put it again. Here's the link to the SEC report for those of you who care about such things. Again, even if you were there in January when it happened and you follow the story, I still thought it was an interesting read, if only to get, you know, the SEC's perspective on what went down. You know, even though it didn't have any, you know, world shaking, earth shattering conclusions, it was a nice play-by-play. It was a nice play-by-play of what happened. If you have no idea what happened, then read that. It was pretty good play-by-play, and I thought it was a good read. So there's the link in chat, and that's what I got here. That's what I got. I sent my PSA about flying. I'm seriously, guys. I'm talking like flights that normally go for $150, $200, going for $500, $600, $700 between Detroit and New York. So. I don't know if that's a lack of supply or what, or maybe they're just already booked. I have no idea, but maybe it's labor. No clue. But Nosh and Davenport says that report was trash. It didn't say anything new, right? It didn't say anything new. So that's the name. And it didn't really say any with regards to like the major parties at play, right? Robinhood, Citadel. It didn't say anything that they themselves haven't already said. So in that sense, it really just agreed with the status quo. So if you were looking for anything new on that front, you were disappointed in this report, right? It really didn't. It didn't lay the blame on naked short selling, didn't lay the blame on Citadel or anything like that. So if that's what you're waiting for, then yes, you surely were disappointed in this report, but a good read otherwise. So, okay. Have a car backup. Yeah. That's maybe a good idea, dude. Towers. I'll just drive there. 10-hour drive. All right. I'm going to hop off here. It is 9:08. We got David Green going live in 15 or so minutes. This video should end and we'll redirect to that stream when it starts. Everyone, good luck at the open today. Oh, actually, last thing before I forget is, and I'm sure we'll talk about this tomorrow as well, but there is actually another Bitcoin futures ETF. There's two. One opens today. That's ProShares. That's BITO. There's another one from Valkyrie Funds opening tomorrow. That ticker is better. It's BTFD. That'll open tomorrow. They do the same thing. They probably have a little bit different fees. I think the ProShares, the BTIO, the fee is 0.95%. So for every $1,000 you invest, you're paying a fee of $9.50. I think the Valkyrie fee is probably close, but probably a little bit different to that. So BTIO today, BTFD tomorrow, both Bitcoin futures ETFs both do the the exact same thing. Really, Ryan, BTFD, really. That is the ticker, BTFD. I'm not lying. I guess it makes sense, right? BTs, Bitcoin, FD could be fun, but we all know what they really mean, right? Great ticker. Yeah, maybe they get all the assets because of the ticker premium. That's a thing. Okay. I'm done. We're at 379 likes, which is not quite 400 if my math is correct, which is disappointing. I got to say, I hope we could get to 400. I thought we could. I appear to have been wrong. That being said, please remember all the information from our show is meant to be used as informational purposes, not for investing or trading advice. Steven, BTFD stands for buy the effing dip. Buy the effing dip is what BTFD stands for. And it usually just works. That's the way it goes. Okay, that's a wrap. Hit the like button. Hit subscribe. Hey, we got to 400. Thank you very much, everyone. I appreciate that. I'll be back in the office on Monday. I feel good. I'm just waiting to write out the policies of the office, apparently. But I'll be back in looking, feeling great. Good to see you guys. David Green going live in 15 or so minutes. And good luck at the open. Stay green. And yay, go SoFi. Woo, $21. Yay.
Did you know nearly all stock price changes of 10% or more result from a single news headline? That's right. News headlines have a unique ability to drive stock prices up or down. These news catalysts create trading opportunities every day. All you need is a little help to reach out and take them. And if you're looking to grow your portfolio, it doesn't matter if your investment budget is small or big. An easy-to-read stream of news headlines will increase your opportunities to profit from price changes in the stock market, consolidate a knowledge-based investment strategy, and grow your portfolio. All you need is Benzinga Pro and its powerful news alerts, price tracking, and portfolio monitoring to make a positive change in your trading performance. We've already helped thousands of retail traders across the world, and they could not be happier. Increase your market knowledge, boost your exposure to big movers, and make informed trades before major price changes. The opportunities are all around you. Subscribe now, and we'll skyrocket your portfolio today.